Cowboys.com.
The following interviews and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks KFAR Radio Problem Corner. Melissa here in for David Pruse today. He is out handling some business. And of course, in the studio, I have brought a guest in, Mr. Aaron Lajeski from the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly. Of course, let's get the first part of this over. Broadcasting live, 660 AM, 97.5 FM, also online, KFARradio.com. Check us out there. As always, we will be accepting calls, 458-8255. That's 458-TALK. If you'd like to ask some questions, talk about what we have going on in the borough or anything to do with Fairbanks. Aaron, how are you today?
I'm doing good.
And so I brought you in today, just figured we could do some talking about the borough, things you have going on. I know that there's been between Mary Sy and Mancho and just everything you guys have going on. Give us a little bit about where the borough is headed. I know you guys are working on your budget and things like that right now.
We're done with our budget.
You're done with your budget. There we go.
Are.
Okay.
Well, first thing I'll note is I'm here just speaking as myself. I'm not representing the positions of the borough or of the assembly.
Absolutely.
So when it comes to the Mancho, we never really had much to say about it to begin with. A resolution was authored, which it amounts to just saying, hey, this is what I think.
Yeah.
It's not legally binding. It's just an opinion statement. So we did have one of those come up. But when it comes to the budget, I would say the two things that people are making the most or the people we're paying the most attention to were the school district funding levels and Mary Sia. So what happened with Mary Sia was at our finance committee meeting, the finance committee on a 7-2 vote basically said, hey, we're planning on shutting down the pool.
Yeah, right.
And so the users of the pool said, hey, wait a second, not so fast. You can't do that without our permission, sort of thing. And so when it got back to the assembly, we kept it open.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of weird things being said on the floor of the assembly during that debate. So what happened was, and Tammy Wilson brought the amendment that ended up carrying, is she went and did the homework, and she found that we had about 12 lifeguard positions all aquatic-wide for the whole borough, for all three pools, that were unfilled. And, of course, the current status of the pools right now is they're open.
Right.
They're not open as much as but they were open prior to COVID because there's empty positions.
Mm-hmm.
But they're open, and, of course, the folks managing those pools, they cherry-pick the users or the hours that the users demand the most. So the hours that are truncated are the ones that affect the least amount of people.
Right.
Just kind of those tail hours sort of thing. So what Tammy said was, well, why don't we just go ahead and get rid of about 3.5 lifeguard positions of the 12 that are unfilled. So no one is getting laid off. No one was getting fired based off of that amendment.
You're just taking that money in reality.
They're saying instead of hiring 12, we're going to hire 9, basically.
Yeah.
And so that amendment carried, and then that was going to allow, versus the mayor's budget, that was going to allow Mary Sia to remain open. And so they still have 9 positions they can fill. Now, of course, like I said, this is for all pools, but that would tell me that the hours at Mary Sia, if the labor conditions improve from the borough's perspective, in other words, is able to successfully fill these positions, the hours should stay the same or be expanded.
Right.
And it was so crazy on the floor of the assembly. There were people saying, if you pass this amendment, it means Mary Sy is done. And you can't blame the administration for the sky falling because it's going to fall.
Yeah.
And it's just, there's so much hyperbole. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And of course, I was chairing the meeting, so I couldn't really
say
interject.
That. Yeah, right.
It was very frustrating hearing just so much. I don't know. I mean, I hate to say the term, but I might as well say it this time. Fake news, basically.
Yeah, misinformation.
Going out. It's just, it was wrong.
Well,
and so
I sat in on a couple of those meetings. I was there for some of it. And first, you know, I got to give kudos out to the public, right? You had a lot of testimony that came in. And for the most part, it was good testimony, you know, just very factual about how the closing would affect, you know, such, how they use it, how they like it. You know, and it kind of did steer away from a lot of the excessiveness that came from the assembly itself. But, you know, after all, you guys did find a solution, you know, and coming to fill those positions, this isn't just a borough thing. This is like a statewide, nationwide.
It's nationwide.
People are having a hard time filling positions everywhere. So I do hope that we are able to find 9 lifeguards. That would be amazing.
Right, and there's a lot of reasons for that bigger cause. Some of it's the baby boomers retiring at a, I don't know, they're probably about at their peak rate of retirement right now. I'm not sure if they're actually past the hump of peak retirement per year. But you've got that. You've got declining birth rates within the country, so there's fewer new folks coming online to work. And then I think this has been understudied, but how many people reduced the amount of hours they wanted to work when they didn't have to do student debt repayment.
Yeah, right. Well, and a lot of
things... That was definitely hundreds of billions of dollars. I'd have to go and look up the numbers. Yep. Perhaps it's been $1 trillion over the course of the postponement on payments. Like, that is a big deal.
Well, and I also think that if you take it back to the pandemic, right, and COVID, I think a lot of families also realize that they can do it on one income. You know, no longer do you have, and we've actually, a few people, friends of mine who have been discussing this, we've actually put some numbers together, and it seems as though those double income families have gone down to single income families because COVID kind of made them realize, okay, well, I can take care of the kids at home. I don't got to pay for daycare. I'm only working to pay for daycare. So there's also a lot of that fall off, I think, when it comes to employment.
And there's nothing wrong with that if people want to have those different choices for their life.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It just, you know, that's just what we're seeing trending-wise when it comes to employees. I mean, we're even short here at the radio station, right? I mean, it affects everybody. I mean, you see gas stations closing early. You see restaurants closing early. We're going to take our first commercial break. When we come back, we'll dive into a little bit more of your budget process. And we're also going to talk about the state and their process as they ended their special session last night. So this is KFAR Radio, and we will be right back.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
The Find Out Free Pregnancy Center provides free, confidential pregnancy tests to any woman in need. But they offer so much more to women, men, and families. By participating in one-on-one parenting classes selected by you, you can take advantage of Earn While You Learn, earning valuable credit to spend on children's items and clothing in Maria's Boutique. The Find Out Free Pregnancy Center. Call 907-455-8255 or visit online findoutfree.com. Findoutfree.com.
Everyone is thankful for springtime, and the crew at Pearson Auto want to take this time to say thank you to all of our local medical first responders and employees who work tirelessly all winter long. Nurses, doctors, EMS, police, and firefighters. And to say thank you, Pearson Automotive is giving all of you free synthetic oil changes through the end of May. That's right, a free oil change, which includes a full safety inspection of your vehicle as well. So if you're a first responder, contact Pearson Auto off the Rich or on Airport Way near Pikes and get your much-deserved free oil change from Pearson Auto. Online at PearsonAutoAK.com.
KFAR weather.
Partly cloudy skies today with a high of 75. Easterly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy tonight, lows dip down to about 50. High temperatures reach up to 72 tomorrow. Chance for scattered storms Sunday. Chance for scattered showers on Monday. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Welcome back, Fairbanks. Melissa here in the studio with Aaron Lajeski from the Borough Assembly. Of course, he's here on his own free will today. I decided to call him up and say, you know, let's talk about some borough stuff. Just touching on Mary Sy and that thing. Now, let's move on to the school district. That was the second half of the funding, and the Borough Assembly, of course, I should say, I'm here on my own free will as well, not a member of the school board, but the Borough Assembly agreed on $50 million to the school district, so that first off, thank you very much for your guys's efforts to help us, and now we kind of sit and wait for the state.
Well, okay, so there's a little bit of a story here. So the first thing is, we had as part of our budgeting process, before we get to the budget, we have to, by state law, well, actually, there's an option to not do it, and then there's a consequence for it. But typically, we're required to pass a resolution, and I wanted to say it's by April 1st. No, maybe April 20th.
I think it was April 20th.
we have like a certain amount of days from receipt of the school district budget right. where we have an opportunity to pass a resolution. If we pass a resolution, what it does is it specifies a guaranteed floor of funding for the school district. The state already mandates a range, and right. this year that range is with rounding between $37 and $70 million. We cannot give less than 37, we cannot give more than 70.
Right.
So if we did a resolution on this, we would need to put in a number somewhere between 37 and 70. And again, that by state statute binds the borough assembly to that floor.
Now, let's, before we move on there, now what happens if you don't come up with that resolution? I know you and I have
right.
had this conversation.
If we do not pass the resolution, mm-hmm. whatever the school district asks for becomes the guaranteed minimum funding. Which is why when we voted on it on the floor of the assembly, it was bizarre. The folks who think they're liberal all acted like conservatives, and the people who think they're conservatives all acted like they're liberals, except for me.
You guys kind of did a flop there.
As far as I'm concerned,
yeah.
I'm the only one who held true to myself, because what we did was we set the resolution at $50 million mm-hmm. through amendments, right? So
right.
then we had the final resolution on the floor to vote on, and it was, okay, do you want to set the floor at 50, or do you want to not pass a resolution? So effectively, the question was, do you want to have a $50 million floor, which would be voting yes
right.
for the resolution. If you killed the resolution, then the school district ask of $59 million would have become the minimum floor. And we didn't have time to scramble together any special
right.
meetings or anything before the deadline.
Right.
So it was really, it came down to a binary choice of $50 million or $59 million. And what happened was the four folks who tend to lean more liberal and say they want more school education voted for the 50.
Mm-hmm.
And then the four folks who say they kind of wanted to have a lower floor, they voted no against the resolution, which was effectively voting for $59 million.
Yeah.
And it was just, it's like the longer you're in politics, the more bizarre stuff you see.
It's just like, really? Wait a second.
So I voted for the 50 because yeah. I wanted the floor to be 50 and not 59.
Absolutely.
And so at any rate, we moved forward into our budgeting process with the 50 passed.
Mm-hmm.
I was the deciding vote on that one. So we came in. And so here's the deal. The school district did ask for 59.
Yes.
And their assumptions was that there would be no increases, $0 increase from the state.
Mm-hmm.
And so what our lobbyists had been telling us for quite a while was, hey, it looks like there's going to be either a one-time or a permanent base student allocation increase. So a one-time funding equivalent would be as if it had been passed, but it's just a one-off. And the amount that our district would have been entitled to based off of that statewide amount would have been $16.2 million.
Yep.
And he kept telling us this week after week after week. And I was going to these legislative briefings with our lobbyist. And so he's pretty good. He seems to have a good pulse on what's going on in Juneau. And so we were able to share that information with the assembly on the floor. So nothing I'm sharing here on the radio is like top secret
yeah,
or anything.
Right, right. No, it's all public.
And it was actually pretty common knowledge down in Juneau from the folks who know what's going on that was where things were moving. And so I'm sitting there doing the math. I'm like, okay, if the school district asked for 59 and we give them 50. Yeah, if you look at that in isolation, that's a $9 million. It's not a cut. It's less than
yeah,
what they asked for.
It's just less than what we're asking.
In fact, it would have been $3 million less than what they had last year from the from the borough. But I just thought, okay, 59, okay, that's a 9 and 50, that's a $9 million difference. And I was like, okay, $16.2 million above zero expected increase. I was like, well, that's $16.2 million more. That's, you know, let's do the math here. That's 16.2 minus 9. That's $7.2 million budget increase
yes.
for the school district.
Mm-hmm.
And folks kept coming to us saying the school district was being cut. And I'm sitting there, wait, I know my, this isn't advanced math. Like, this is elementary math. This
right.
is like, what, second grade, third grade, at least when I, yeah, I think this is what we did in third grade.
It's pluses and minuses.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like $7.2 million above what they asked for. This isn't a cut. This is a funding increase. And of course, there's a little bit of uncertainty. Does
mm-hmm.
the state come through? Does the governor veto it? Well, here's the deal. Last night, they went into a special session.
Yep.
Or a 30-day special session, which they got done in one day. And they immediately agreed to the $16.2 million.
Yep.
I'm talking the House and the Senate and the legislature.
Yes, they're
done. They have their budget.
It'll be
our
one
lobbyist
time,
was
not,
right.
Yeah, it'll be one time, not the BSA, but it's still $16.2 million, and we're very grateful.
Well, and
for
probably
that.
What's going to happen is it's going to get turned into a BSA
yes.
permanent
yeah.
increase
at the next
year, right before the election.
Yeah.
So the school district's in good shape if you analyze them based off of what they asked for versus what they got.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked a couple of political folks who know more about the inner workings of Juneau than I do, and they're saying they think it's pretty unlikely that the governor is going to touch that school district funding. He's probably not going to veto it, although he could. So this gets us into the other part of our budget, because there was some risk the school district would kind of get chopped out and have a problem. And so what we did was we we created what I call a fat fund balance.
Right.
So just like all of us, like it's a good idea to have, you know, an emergency fund where you have, you know, 3 to 6 months, you know, Dave Ramsey, right? 3 to 6 months of your expenses.
Yeah, 6 months of salary is what they say.
The way they do it for us is that this is based off of accounting guidelines, is 17% of your budget you're supposed to keep as your emergency fund for the entity, for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. So what we did was, and the borough has a large budget, so 17% is millions of dollars. So we stuffed in five, and this was like leftover money from last year. If you have those HR positions like we were talking about and they're never filled, well, then you had that money in the budget and it was never expended.
Right.
So that's called a lapse. It gets dumped into your general fund or your emergency fund at the end of the year when you get all the accounting done. So we had a $7 million fat fund balance above our target. We used $2 million of that for tax relief, and then we kept $5 million in, largely in case something went wonky with the school district.
Right.
So we could do a supplemental appropriation just in case, and still there, if the governor does veto something, we got $5 million of cushion we can throw at the school district. So it's really risk reduction is the way I look at it. And then we can, how much time do we have until
the
break?
We're good. Yeah, okay. We got about 8 minutes.
Oh, we got 8 minutes. Well, then the other part of that $5 million is that can be utilized to help our KIPP.
Mm-hmm.
And we could talk about that, I guess, a little bit right now. And I've got some charts up right in front of me.
So first off, tell people who don't know what KIPP, what is it?
Well, so here's the deal. When I first ran, it was 2017. And mm-hmm. the situation we were in, if everyone recalls, is that the state was kind of setting into a more lean mode. Like it had some periods in the past where oil went down, it went lean, and then oil went back up and it got fat again, right? Budget wise, and the happy times were back. But by 2017, it was kind of like, hey guys, it looks like the paradigm has permanently shifted. We're probably not going to have long-term happy times coming back, right? So the state was much more lean, and what that meant was local governments had a much more difficult time if they had local school buildings or whatever that were falling apart, of just sending some people down to the Capitol and saying, hey, we need some money. Because in the past, a lot of time, they got the money when they asked for it.
Right.
And not only that, but they had this program, and it's kind of being, it appears as if it's kind of being grandfathered out, the school bond debt reimbursement program, where you could just go float a bond to pay for a school, and then the state would pay 90% of your bond payments. So practically, that was free.
Yeah.
Not quite. There's still 10% for the local taxpayer. But so they had these programs. The school bond debt reimbursement got put in a moratorium. I think it's up to expire next year, but they're probably just going to extend it. They probably should. I mean, why should the state be incentivizing debt?
Absolutely.
I don't know who came up with that idea. Incentivizing debt. You just get more debt if you do that. At any rate.
Here, get more debt.
And well, at any rate, so 2017, I got my chart here. Our debt payments in the borough were $19 million per year.
Wow.
Even for the borough,
that's
a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
So $19 million, and the situation we were on was that people were going down to Juneau and they weren't being successful getting money for borough buildings, school buildings, and whatnot. There was no more school debt reimbursement happening for new bonds. The old stuff was still, it became a political football, sometimes being honored, sometimes not, in terms of the series that were out and the bond payments that were actually being made. But for new stuff, it was kind of done. And so local voters were like, hey, well, we don't really want to issue more debt if we're just going to have to pay for all of it. We thought the state was going to do 90%, but if we have to pay for it, maybe we don't want to do this. And there actually were, about that time, a few different ballot initiatives for debt, and they got defeated. I voted against them.
Yeah.
I think the voters made the right choice. And so basically we had this problem where, okay, the state's not giving us freebies. We're not issuing new debt, which, again, a good thing. How are we going to pay for the buildings when they wear out?
Right.
How are we going to replace a high school or
A
borough building, or a heating system. How are you going to pay for this? And the other thing is, we do have a tax revenue cap, which is wonderful. It helps restrain the size of local government and make sure it doesn't get too big. And I know there's probably a lot of folks listening who are like, it is too big. Well, I'm not going to argue with you on that.
Yeah,
you're right.
But it keeps it from getting bigger.
It'd be even worse.
Yeah.
If we didn't have this tax cap. So we were literally like to the penny at the cap when I got elected.
Yeah.
The assembly and the mayor at the time had been making the decision, let's push the cap as hard as we can. Let's get every single penny out of the people that we can. And so we were at the situation. We were at the cap. There was no new bond money. There was no new money coming from the state. And the borough wasn't saving enough money to pay for its buildings. So it's like, something's going
to
break.
Pay Paul.
You're sitting there driving towards a cliff. And it's like, something's going to break eventually. You know, you might be able to push it out for a few more years. So what I did was I came up with this idea, and it's really simple. It's just like, some of you listening might save 10% of your income every year for retirement. Maybe it's 5, maybe it's 15, maybe it's 20, whatever. Different for different people, and sometimes you adjust it. But I said, well, why don't we just use that same principle for the borough, for buildings? So I did an ordinance that said we're going to do 7%, and we're just going to save it into a capital fund. And we've massaged it up over the few years. It's now at 10%. No one's talking about changing it. I'm not talking about changing it. I think 10% is probably a pretty good level. But we're dumping 10% into a capital fund. So then the question becomes, okay, you got this money. How do you spend it intelligently?
Mm-hmm.
So this is where the borough mayor came on and helped. Now, I co-sponsored with him, but he said, hey, I got an idea of how to spend this correctly. And it's kind of funny because the borough mayor, he didn't like the forced savings.
Yeah,
because it was like that put a leash on his budget crafting ability. But that was kind of the point. It's like we've been failing at this for so long. We have to have a kind of more structured way of dealing with it. But to his credit, he kind of he turned around and ended up embracing the program pretty rapidly. So good on Mayor Ward for that. But so anyway, he did some research and he kind of was the core driver of how to spend it. And so he came up with this thing called the Capital Improvement Fund, which is just a methodical approach of listing out all of your projects, trying to score them, see which ones are most critical, which ones are most important. And then you come up with a schedule, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, however many. It depends on how big they are, how much staff time you have, how much money you have.
The dire need of them.
Yeah, you knock out some projects every single year. So to tie this back to the extra $5 million in our budget, now it looks like the school district isn't going to need it, which is great because now we can deal with the capital problem. So along with this whole HR issue that's been happening around the country, local contractors, and I think this has been happening, like I said, everywhere, when you put out a project for bid, right, your engineer says, hey, we think it's going to be $1 million for, maybe it's a pool replaster or whatever it is,
or a roof, or
whatever. Well, the engineers are usually pretty good at predicting how much it's going to cost. And so what we've been having happen is oftentimes the bids come in 50% or maybe even 100% double what the engineers thought they were going to be. So what this means is we basically can't do the KIPP projects at the pace we had planned on, as long as the bids come in high. So we can slow them down and do it about half the rate, and it'll work just fine. But what that $5 million can do is we can use that to reinforce the KIPP and keep the projects going at their intended pace, at least for a year or so.
Well, and what a lot of people don't realize is you guys have a lot of buildings. You guys have a lot of capital improvement projects that you need to take care of, and that includes school district buildings.
School district buildings are the main source of square footage that the borough owns.
Yep.
The school district operates them and pays for the heat and everything, but the borough pays for all the capital costs.
Well, and I know you guys help take care of Hutch and the heating problem there, so, you know, that $5 million that can help with things like that. So it's great that you came up with this resolution to where the borough is able to start saving money. And while Mayor Ward may have not been a fan of it, you know, my mom always taught me,
let's not throw him under the bus. That only lasted like a day. He turned around.
A day.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mayor Ward, I didn't mean it like that. But yeah, it's, you know, my mom always.
It's really to his credit.
Yeah,
to absolutely. Have someone who's initially against something
to
and then so quickly
it.
Be like, you know what, I was wrong, this is a great idea, that shows much more character than someone who is just like, this is just a good idea the whole time.
And you don't go into adulthood, right, like my mom would say, and spend all your money. You have a small fund that you can tap on a rainy day or if something massive breaks. Even though this is a bigger budget, it's all the same kind of concepts. It's you want to make sure that there's a fund there so that rainy day things happen, things break, repairs can happen, repairs can take place.
Well, here's a connection to the school district. You know, a lot of folks are critical saying how the school district is being starved, but through our KIPP and capital improvements, and even some before the KIPP was in existence, we had been putting a lot of money into like upgrading lights and upgrading insulation.
Right.
When we redo a roof, put in more insulation than it had, make sure the doors are working correctly, get double or triple paned windows, that sort of thing in school district buildings. The borough pays for that.
Yeah.
But the school district receives the savings.
Yes.
When it pays half as much for heat or half as much for electricity.
Yes, we're saving the money.
Right. So
absolutely.
Effectively, that's equivalent to an increase in the school district budget, but it's never seen as a direct revenue line because it's a reduction in cost.
Yeah.
So that's been happening, and the school district is still benefiting from that. And I just think it's understated. No one ever really does the math and counts it up, but I have no doubt it's to the tune of millions of dollars every year. Probably not tens, but probably several million dollars a year.
Fairbanks, we'll be right back. A little you too. For your bumper music today.
Yeah. Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Today from Florida Governor Ron DeSantis speaking in New Hampshire. We've heard that by next week he's going to make it official to run for president. Here's what he had to say today.
You look at what we've been able to accomplish. There is something in there for anybody. In terms of the issues that we tackled, we did a record. I set the previous record for tax relief in Florida. Last year, we did about $1.1 billion.
South Carolina Senator Tim Scott has made it official. He's filed the paperwork. We're expecting a formal announcement later. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, he's in Saudi Arabia right now, attending the Arab League summit, and he talked about the war in Ukraine.
Anyone who defends his native land from invaders, and anyone who defends children of his nation from enslavement.
America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
A lower court will reconsider the 135-year sentence given to a 14-year-old girl 4 decades ago for her role in the shooting deaths of 3 people in Alaska's largest city. When Winona Fletcher was sentenced in 1986, she became the youngest female ever convicted of murder in Alaska. The Anchorage Daily News reports the Alaska Court of Appeals sent the case back to the lower court. For reconsideration of the sentence because the judge did not consider her prospects for rehabilitation. Alaska Native villages have long been caught on the wrong side of the digital divide with no internet connections or a sluggish link at best. For some, the only option is a bank-busting satellite uplink. One village is paying $3,000 a month. Jill Biden, late Wednesday, made the first visit by a First Lady to the Southwest Alaska community of Bethel to tout broadband investments in Alaska Native villages and other tribal organizations through the $1 trillion 2021 infrastructure bill. In Alaska, 21 projects have received more than $386 million for improvements.
Just around the corner? Stop by A&W and see what's new this summer. Meal deals, sweets and treats, drop in or drive through after the game or before the movies. A&W has this summer in the bag. Fairbanks A&W on Airport Way.
It's that time again, folks. The Yukon Quest $10,000 raffle is back May 24th and will be held at Big Daddy's Barbecue. And only 250 tickets are being sold, with the grand prize being $10,000 and 11 additional winners. Each ticket of $100 includes one free barbecue buffet dinner. Food served at 6 and raffle begins at 6:30 May 24th at Big Daddy's Barbecue. Buy your tickets now at the Yukon Quest gift shop at 550 First Avenue.
This is Justin Vay, sales manager at Fairbanks Chevy, and we are paying our top dollar for clean, used vehicles. We're looking to buy trucks, cars, SUVs, any make and any model. Bring your vehicle down to 3300 South Cushman for a quick 5-minute appraisal, and we will make you a cash offer today. No appointments necessary. Turn your car into cash at Chevy of Fairbanks. Find us online at fairbankschevy.com. Test drive a new Chevy while you wait. Chevy, find new roads.
Any negative equity must be paid in full or added to new purchase or lease.
The Fairbanks Clinic has been here for you since 1932, the year Amelia Earhart completed the first female nonstop solo flight across the Atlantic, the year BBC aired their first television broadcast. That was over 90 years ago, and they're still here, still taking care of you and your family. That's the Fairbanks Clinic in their beautiful building at the corner of Cushman and Gaffney. Call and schedule your appointment today with their family care practice. That's the Fairbanks Clinic, here for you since 1932.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM,
and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back to Problem Corner. Melissa Burnett here in the studio in for David Pruse, sitting with Aaron Lajewski today, discussing all things budget-wise and borough school board related. We were just talking about funding and the school board and the $50 million resolution. Now, the borough has agreed to the $50 million. And the state has ended their special session, and the state has agreed to the one-time funding of 16.2 to the school district. So now we wait for the governor. And, you know, the temperature that you and I are both kind of hearing doesn't seem to be veto-worthy. We'll see what happens there. And as long as nothing does get vetoed, then the school district sits in a pretty nice spot where we're able to take care of our PTR. We're able to handle class sizes and some of our teachers and take care of them, which is exactly where we wanted to be. And when it comes to the borough,
wait, did you just say what I thought I heard you say?
What did I say?
I don't know. If you went to a borough assembly meeting, you would have heard that if we didn't pass $59 million, the sky was falling. And that we hated children and that we wanted education to go to zero and yada, yada, yada.
There was some rhetoric that was spit out that actually just made me go, wow, when somebody stated that our borough assembly and Senator Myers hated children. And I just, those kind of sentiments, like, that's not okay, first off.
Was that a school board member or
no,
a member of the public?
Just a member of the public. And okay. It was, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, we're all in a situation where unless you're in it, I don't think you really truly understand it. Trying to figure out a budgetary system on fake numbers, fake kids, especially in a school district. So,
well, that's why we left $5 million extra in our bank account.
Right.
That was a buffer. It was risk reduction.
Yeah, right. Well, my point being, you know, is with the borough and with the school district, I think we can all agree on the timelines of things and how it all works out. The funding process alone, I'll say, is not favorable to the school district or the borough. It makes us do ours, makes you do yours, and then they decide on theirs.
It doesn't have to be that way.
No, not at all. And it would be nice to see it switch around a little bit so that we're not having to form things off of numbers that we don't have. If that makes sense.
Well, the system seems like it's designed to turn everyone against each other.
Yes, it's designed for battles, and that's kind of what happened with the school district and the borough.
It makes the administration of the school district fight the board. It makes the board fight the unions. It makes the unions fight the administration. It makes those three fight the borough. It makes the borough fight the state. It
makes
the state
public,
fight the unions. Make the state fight the school boards and so forth.
And it makes the public come out with for our heads. It's exactly what happens every single year. And it would be nice if we could figure out a way to fix it.
Well, if you could somehow get the state to pass a budget earlier, that seems like the easiest way.
Right. But then we see what happens with the state and how they work out.
I mean, it seems like it'd be difficult for the school district to change its fiscal year. So the school district doesn't do a calendar fiscal year. Same thing with the borough. It does split years. So it starts July 1st through June 30th. And that makes sense, I think, if you're the school district.
Right.
Because then that covers, you know, one fiscal year is within one school district year.
Well, it covers when the bodies are in the building as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't think you'd want to change that. The borough could change its if it really wanted to. Like the city's on a calendar year. The borough could do that too. But then we would be passing a budget in the fall. And I'm not sure how that would work if we would. Yeah, that's probably why the borough is on the same schedule as you. It's probably to align with the school district since we're a major source of funding.
Yeah.
You'd have to go back into the history books and figure that out. You know, that's like 40, 50 years back to figure out what's going on there. But no, the whole thing is definitely messed up. There's no doubt about that. There's also a weird thing going on. I know our borough mayor has been big into it, and it is one of the legislative priorities for the borough assembly. And it has to do with required local contribution. And folks listening may or may not have even heard of that term. But according to the state constitution, it's the state government that has the responsibility of funding education.
Absolutely.
So the way that's sort of interpreted is that that means that the state's supposed to fund all of the educational expenses up until what someone might define as a basic need. So all the core education should be funded by the state. And I don't know how they got away or got around this legally, but they've decided that if there is an area that's incorporated, you know, the borough, you know, Anchorage would be the biggest area, Juneau, whatever, all these areas, Mat-Su, then the state no longer has to pay for all of it. Then what the state does is they have a special formula, and this is the required local contribution. The required local contribution is the component that the state constitutionally has to pay for that they've decided that somehow they can sidestep the Constitution and force the local government to pay for it instead.
Yeah.
And it's just a part of it, but that's when we were talking before about that that $37 million minimum. That's the required local contribution.
Right.
That's why we cannot go below that, because the state's saying, no, you borough, you have to pay for our constitutional obligation.
Which
is just bizarre to me. I don't know. I need to talk to an attorney about this. Like, how can that be done? How can the state sidestep the Constitution and force its responsibility onto the local government? I don't know. I'm sure there's an answer for it.
Right.
Because they're doing it and no one's challenging them. But at any rate, what that means is if you live in an area like Delta, the state pays for all of it. There is no required local contribution because there's no local government.
Right.
But if you're in the borough, Now you got to pay $37 million. Mm-hmm. We're doing 50, so we're doing 13 above what we have to do.
I always called Delta Junction their special little beast.
Well, so what this means is effectively, if you're in an incorporated area, you're getting less money from the state for education than if you're in a non-incorporated area. So this is creating an economic disincentive to create small local governments.
Yep.
And so it's just kind of weird. It also creates this urban-rural disparity where, you know, if you're in an urban area, you're penalized. If you're in a rural area and that's not incorporated, you could be in a rural area like, I guess, Nenana has their own school district. So right. they're being penalized the same as we are, even though they're very, very small. But, incorporated versus non-incorporated disparity. And it's kind of weird. And I think that's actually, if you go back, this is what I've been told, because this happened like before I possibly before I was born, like this might have happened like probably early 80s is my guess. But I think that's where the school bond debt reimbursement came from. I think the idea was, okay, well, these non-incorporated areas are getting favorable treatment. Therefore, the state will pay for some of the debt of the urban areas to try to equalize it.
Right.
And then the unintended consequence is you subsidize debt and you get a whole bunch more debt, which destabilizes the whole system.
Right.
It's like,
what
knucklehead
debt.
Came up with that? Like, I understand the fairness issue, but it's like incentivizing debt. Like, they would have been better off just doing some sort of cash payment or whatever. But at any rate, yeah, so that's the required local contribution issue. And there's probably going to be a push next year to try to make it go away. The downside of it going away is that it puts upward pressure on the state budget because then the state has to pick up the tab.
Yeah.
It just depends on what local governments decide to do with it. It would probably, my prediction would be, it would result in local mill rates going down.
Which would be great for our taxpayers.
But it would also likely, unless the state can find another way to fund it, there's a good chance it would also result in the dividends going down, which is
right.
part of the reason why it's contentious. It's because of how we're funding it. Or, well, it's not that that's how it's being proposed to be funded. It's just like that's the way Juneau's been working the last 5 years or 7 years, whatever it's
been. Well, and if you look at the PFD, if you know, you look at it there, we're already, according to the state, in that danger. I was listening to Senator Myers actually last night, and he kind of put this in a really relative layman's terms for the person, right? He related it to his job, truck driving, right? You're driving a truck, the truck is breaking down, the bridge is out. Like, this is where you're at with the PFD already and with the state budget. So it's like, if my question is, if that were to happen and the local contribution did go away, which I would be in favor of, I don't think the taxpayers should be responsible. I think the state, per statute, the state needs to take care of it. But my question is, you know, what does that look like for the state's budget? Because that's also a big thing. I mean, I think it would put a big damper on it.
I think it would be a few $100 million a year. I'd have to go back and check.
Yeah.
I mean, let's think, if it's $37 million for us, you know, for Anchorage, it's probably going to be at least, what, 3, 4, 5 times that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're definitely looking at the several hundred millions of dollars per year, and then it would create fairness between incorporated and non-incorporated areas. That would be the benefit. So, but, yeah, it puts upward pressure on the state budget, which
Absolutely.
Isn't a good thing, and I think that's why some people are like, wait a second, do we want the state budget to be any bigger than it is?
It is,
but,
yeah.
But on the other hand, it's just shifting taxes onto the local property taxpayer.
Right. Exactly.
And only some of them.
Yeah.
Not the ones who don't live in cities. So it's an interesting issue. Actually, I was just looking at my chart. I didn't finish the thought here on letting folks know what was happening with our debt service, right?
Oh,
so
right,
we created the capital fund.
Right.
We're basically self-funding our capital projects.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was elected, debt payments, this is with rounding. I'm looking at a bar chart, so it could be off by a couple hundred thousand.
He's got a couple books in front of him. It's impressive.
$19 million a year.
Yeah.
And as I look at the chart, it dropped every year all the way to the present. And right now, we're down to just over $10 million a year in debt payment. So we've gone from 19 to 10 by self-funding our buildings. We're still asking for the state. If they'll give us help, we'll take it. But I mean, they're not as much.
You're still solving a lot of your own problems with this ordinance that has given you savings.
Yeah, and in 5 to 6 years, we've gone from $19 million a year in debt payments to 10.
That's huge.
And I don't know if you can see this chart over here, but these are the bond payments in the future, which will not change if we don't pay anything off early and we don't issue new debt. Like, this is
that's
easy
an impressive
to forecast.
Chart. If people could see it, it's absolutely impressive, actually.
So we are well on our route to being debt-free as a borough government, and I'll take credit for it because I was the big – I mean, it wasn't just me. I mean, if the borough voters would have kept approving debt, the plan wouldn't have worked. So kudos to the borough voter, you know, the local election voters who rejected new debt And I hope they continue to do that, because we can fund this on our own and we can become debt free. And that's going to create a more stable local government. It's going to be a cheaper way of funding our buildings in the long run. And it's going to, well, it's already put downward pressure on property taxes. I know sometimes, like in the year to year bouncing around of mill rates and everything, people don't notice it, but it's there. It's happening every year. It's just like this nice positive wind at our back, just kind of making things a little bit easier. Even if it's a tough year, it would have been even tougher if it weren't for this program sort of thing. So, and I actually wanted to share my experience. I went down to Juneau a couple of weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it's the first time I've been down there as an adult.
Oh, nice.
So I moved up here in 2006, and I moved up straight from graduating high school, basically. I came up in July, so I only had like a month or two in Colorado where I grew up. And I would have come up earlier, except my brother was getting married.
Yeah.
So I went to his wedding.
And, so you never made it to Juneau until just recently?
No. So the year between my junior year and senior year in high school, after like 5 years of bugging my parents, I got them to do a road trip. So it took like 5 years of planning. And we drove up to Bellingham, took the ferry, stopped through Juneau, and I spent like 2 or 3 days there. And I didn't know which university I wanted to go to. I know, like, don't judge me too much. I hadn't been to Juneau, okay? And I was thinking of UAS or UAF, and I just didn't know, right? Hadn't been to the state before. And I kind of liked UAS until I got to Juneau, and I was like, nope, it's UAF. I knew that before I even got to Fairbanks. I was like, there's so much rain. I can't do this. It's just raining all the time. So anyway, though, I got to go back. So it was 2006, just a few weeks ago. And I know there's a lot of people listening who probably have been down there, but you learn a lot just from being in that building for 2 days about how everything works. And of course, the short answer is not very well.
Well, coming up, we're going to take a quick break. And then coming up and after our break, we'll discuss how Juneau works.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
The truth be told, I do not mind being a septic tank. I stay quite busy. I'm an avid reader. I've taught myself the language of the raven. Fascinating creatures, but horrible gossips. Until recently, I have had aspirations to be the first septic tank on Mars. But I know my job is right here, buried in my family's yard. Bigfoot Pumpin' and Thawin' pumps me out once a year, and I continue to serve my family much better.
Wings on Wednesdays for just $1.50 each. That's every Wednesday at Big Daddy's. Wings the way you like them. Slow smoked and delicious with great choice of styles, including original buffalo and sweet honey barbecue, to name just a few. Come by Wednesday for wings at Big Daddy's and load your plate up with some of those sides that speak Southern, like collard greens, red beans and rice, and so many other choices. It's the award-winning northernmost Southern barbecue. Big Daddy's on Wickersham between 1st and 2nd Avenue.
Weather brought to you by the Eye Clinic of Fairbanks. Your eyes connect you to your world. Care for them with the Eye Clinic of Fairbanks, your eye health professionals on Mini Street.
KFAR weather.
Partly cloudy skies today with daytime highs approaching 75. Winds out of the east, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Overcast skies tonight, lows level off around 50. Overcast tomorrow, highs around 72. Chance for scattered thunderstorms Sunday. Chance for scattered showers on Monday. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back to Problem Corner. Melissa Burnett here with Aaron Lajewski. Now, Aaron, before we went to break, we were talking, you have never in your adult life been to Juneau.
Till a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
So first off, let me say, I've never actually been to Juneau either as an adult or as a kid. I tried to actually get there this winter, but family things and things happening, I wasn't there. So how was your trip? And you said, you know, two days in that building and you learned so much.
Yeah, well, no, my trip this time, second time ever there, was a lot better than the first time. Partly because the first time I was there, it just rained the whole time.
That's Juneau,
so,
from what I hear.
And I arrived by ferry, so the second time I came on in, the airplane landed and couldn't see the mountains or anything. It's like, how are they even navigating through all the clouds?
Right.
It's like, and there was an Alaska Airlines flight that flew into a mountain like 20 years ago, landing in Juneau.
Reasons I've not been to Juneau.
Yeah, I watch all the like disaster documentaries, and they actually make me feel better about flying because you learn about all the learned lessons and how they incorporate it into future safety. But at any rate, got on in, and it was raining just like I remembered it.
Mm-hmm.
And Well, I'll just cover the weather. The next day, it was even worse. It was like sideways rain.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
And then it slowly got better until it was clear.
Yeah.
Then there's perfect weather that I had no time to enjoy as I needed to go on a 6 or 7 a.m. flight, whatever the first flight of the morning was out. But it was perfect weather, like stuff that, like what we have here today, right now.
Yeah, very rarely happens in Juneau.
So, yeah, it was very, very nice. But at any rate, to the Capitol building. So our lobbyist, the borough lobbyist, I told him, work me to death. Set up as many meetings as you can with as many people that you think are influential and whatnot. And Kristen Kelly in the borough assembly, she joined a day later. She had limited ability to get time off work, but she came as much as she could. And we did our rounds. And, of course, we talked to the interior delegation, everyone that everyone already knows around here, because they're always running around talking to us, you know. But a bunch of people that I hadn't met before, and there's actually one in a specific conversation that may have made a difference for Fairbanks. And, of course, you never know for sure.
Right.
But and he's actually pretty well known. Some people have probably heard of Senator Donnie Olson.
Yeah.
So we had a meeting with him, and we kind of knew that it was going to be difficult pushing most of our legislative priorities most of the time with folks who didn't have a specific interest to be in line with.
Right.
So I was asking for more capital money for our bids that came in over on the KIP, so we keep the KIP moving at full steam. That didn't make the final project, and that was part of our official priorities. I stuck to our script, right?
Yeah,
when you're down
right.
there, you're
just
representing your body.
You've
got a script. You stick to your body's priorities. You don't go off and do whatever you want, which is also part of the reason why it was good that there were two of us there so we could kind of chaperone each other and make sure we
I love that you said that, by the way.
So, well, it's just true. You put one person and they start doing... Things start to get much loose much faster when you don't have people to hold each other accountable.
Absolutely.
So at any rate, we went to Senator Olson's office, and it happens to be that he is very interested in the health of the salmon in the Yukon River drainage and other western rivers in Alaska. And we talked about that a couple weeks ago on the radio. But I ended up authoring a resolution encouraging a shutdown in Area M of commercial fishing to help with the escapement into the river system.
And that's a huge deal.
We passed it 9-0.
Fantastic.
With 9 co-sponsors.
Fantastic.
I can't remember the last time that's happened on the assembly.
But that whole fish, that's huge.
Well, it is, but I'm going to tie it to how it might have helped us with a veteran cemetery.
Oh.
Maybe. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Right.
So I thought that issue was important on its own right. It deserves credit for its sake. But it turned out that, of course, Senator Olson was sponsoring the Senate bill that our resolution was kind of supporting. And Fairbanks, like I said, in North Pole did a companion one. Well, we had done this on Friday, and I was flying out on Monday.
Right.
So I went down to the clerk's office. And I was like, hey, can you get this thing ready so we can have a copy so I can hand it to, Senator Olson? And we got it all signed off, got it all officially, blessed off, so it's an official document, and got him the first copy. So we just went to his office. We listened to him talk about fish issues for about 30 minutes and how they affected some of the areas that he represents and so forth. And then literally, just as we're leaving, I just said, hey, because he's on Senate Finance.
Right.
And these finance people, they understand how money works. And
yes.
They typically want to bring in more money to the state. They want the state economy to grow.
Yes.
And so that means sometimes you have grant projects, and sometimes they can be really juicy where you spend $1 of state dollars and you get $5 or $10 of federal money.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a project like that in the borough. Also, if I'm not mistaken, I think 10% of the population of the borough have served in the armed forces.
Yeah.
Veterans. And then add the active duty to that. That's a lot more,
Yeah.
And right now, if you're a veteran and you pass away and you want to be buried in a veteran cemetery, which you don't have to, but if you want to, some people do, the closest one is basically in Anchorage.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. I know a lot of people in Fairbanks who do not want to
be
buried in Anchorage.
No, they don't want to be. They want to be buried here.
Yeah, and it could be North Pole. It could be Fairbanks. It could
but
be Esther, whatever.
Here in the interior.
In the Golden Heart. So... we have a couple people on the assembly who have been working on this for a long time, former legislators and current assembly members, Guttenberg and Wilson. And so it had been put originally into the governor's budget, then had gotten stripped out.
Mm-hmm.
And this project needed $1 million more of state money to get something like $6 or $7 million of federal money.
Right.
Probably a pretty nice cemetery for that amount of money, but we don't have one. And the whole region doesn't have one for the northern half of Alaska. And again, you're talking to a guy who shares our region, Donnie Olson, and he understands that if he spends $1 million, he can bring in $5-6 million of outside money.
Right.
And so just literally as we're leaving, you know, I just said, hey, you know, by the way, we got this veteran cemetery. It would be the closest cemetery for folks in your district if we get it built, and here's the match. And it's like you could just see something go off in his eyes.
Yeah.
It's like that got his attention. And so I don't know if that made a difference or not, but at the last minute, I think it was yesterday, it got reinserted into the budget and approved.
Fantastic.
And I'm just sitting here wondering, did we make the difference there,
yeah,
or would that have happened anyway? Or like, you just never know.
Well, you do never know, but you know, I'd like to think that that conversation did make the difference. You know, I mean, face it, we have how many veterans here? I mean, I know that you and I don't have the exact number, but I would say 1 in 5 Fairbanksons are probably veterans.
Maybe for adults. I think, yeah, it's 10% overall. I was just looking at some census data on it
right.
The other day.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, you're a numbers guy. But we have quite the population of veterans and military here. And to not have to send them to Anchorage for burial purposes or even the lower 48, you know, that'd be amazing to have that here.
Well, it looks like it's going to go through. I would think the governor wouldn't be vetoing $1 million of state money with that kind of federal match and with the veteran population here.
Right.
I mean, yeah, I don't think he will. But, I mean, it's been a long, long effort for Ms. Wilson and Mr. Guttenberg. And I mean, it was a big team effort.
Yeah.
It's definitely no
right.
one person whatsoever.
No, kudos to the assembly. But, so let me ask then. Let's say this goes through, governor doesn't veto, so you get the money for it. Now, what does that look like for the borough?
Well, then my question is, what do the bids come in at?
Oh, yeah.
What if the bids come in high, like they've been coming high for the KIPP? Then probably what I would hope they do is, if it's a robust enough cemetery, hopefully they can rescope the project and then build half of what they wanted if the bids come in high, and then at least we still have one to start off with. You could always expand off of it later. But I actually don't know the answer to,
yeah,
what if the bids come in high and it busts the budget.
Right.
What do you do?
What do you do?
Do you,
yeah,
go look for more money? Do you scope down the project? That's what we can do at the local level, is if we decide, well, we can live with less, then we just build less.
Right. Well, and that's a start too, right? I mean, we can build less and then maybe build more later, add on something of that nature. Would that be a possibility?
Probably, but I just don't know how the mechanism works behind the scenes. I do know that at the borough level, and it's kind of cool that we're talking about this, because it's like, imagine you had budgeted, you know, $30,000 for a new car, and then it's like, oh, that car's now $50,000.
Yeah, right.
It's like, okay, well, if you can live without it, you can save up and get the money, or you could go buy a used car or a different type of car that fits your budget. And it's basically like it forces the borough to think in the same way, which is the right way to think. That's what you do when there's not enough money.
Yeah.
You need to pivot and adjust for your available resources.
Absolutely. And I love that you said that. That's exactly how it should be. You've got to adjust to what you have. It's like if you are trying to budget for your winter at home and how much wood you need or how much fuel you'll need, you're not going to go try to get more than you can attain. You know, so it's a great thing. I can't wait to see what comes of it and what ends up happening, because this would be absolutely amazing.
And I forget where the exact location is. I know Ms. Wilson, she's been there and in the site somewhere, I think, between North Pole and Salcha.
Oh.
And I've been told it's got a really beautiful view on a clear day of the Alaska Range to the south. And I think you can see right across the Tanana River as well. I don't think that's blocked by trees or anything. And it's just supposed to be like a perfect location for a cemetery, which, cross our fingers, looks like we're gonna get. For our veterans now, and no one has to get buried in Anchorage if they don't want to.
Yeah, no, that's amazing, and especially because it concerns our veterans. You know, there's nobody more special out there than those who have served our country. So,
and Mr. Guttenberg, he says he's got a buddy. I forget if it was a high school buddy or what, who did not survive the Vietnam conflict and is sitting in an urn in his house,
and he
waiting
would love
for
to,
that
waiting
cemetery.
For that's kind of beautiful. I just got to say, that's kind of beautiful. Aaron, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. It's been a pleasure having you. Listeners, David will be back Monday. I hope you guys have a fantastic weekend. Enjoy the weather. It's going to be great out there. We do have a wind advisory in effect for tonight, so button down the hatches if you need to. You guys have a fantastic weekend.